Blog Talk Radio.
This is your host, Tamara L. Thank you for tuning in once again to State of the Nationals that airs every Thursday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Now, tonight's episode, we have Shem Malachi, known as Thundercloud of United Republic of Morocco, voicing from Philadelphia Corporation of the land of Shaka Maxim, whom will discuss treaty power, the supreme law of the land. Now, we got started a little late. We had some technical difficulties, so let's go ahead and just bring on Brother Shem Malachi Bey. Good evening, Shem.
Yes.
All right,
yes.
There you go.
How you doing, Tamara?
I'm doing great. Once again, I want to thank you for accepting the invitation to speak to the Nationals. And let's just go ahead and get into it. We even though we started late, we're going to make that time back up. So let's just go ahead and get into, I know last episode we shed some light on the two nations occupying the Moorish Empire. One is asleep and the other one is usurping the power. So let's just go ahead and dive into treaty power, the supreme law of the land.
Treaties is the law of the land. First of all, peace, justice, contract and honor and friendship to all the nationals and nobles and princes and princesses throughout the Moroccan Empire. I'm going to talk about and discuss and answer the questions to show the significance of the power of treaty and how positive jurisprudence, norms, facts, and law applies to everyone that's pedigreed through nationality. Nationality is the key. The Western world, civilized world, have knowledge and wisdom and settle in this firm principle that an ancient law is founded on. Ancient piety and deity is founded on through culture, blood pedigree. Also, there's what you call the statutory fiction, which is called race, which is created to fictitious ideology, thoughts, and doctrines of men who like to make people in servitude involuntary through a vice, a legislative vice in philosophy and opinions. Through their college-found colleges, they use to clone. What I mean clone, that means they create another personality in you that's suppressed. The divinity that's in you to invoke the truth and to see the truth, speak the truth, think the truth, and write the truth. And our ancestors was the first ones of the most favored nation that gave foreign nations and their subjects amnesty and asylum to be here. And that these people are melanated nations. And also you have mulatto people. So what they are doing is making you think that you have no place in history with the ancient blood pedigree people. But yet even William Penn, a well-recognized esquire under the king, gave a description of the Lenni Abbey Moors and said they was tall, some medium built with this is what he said about the Moor, because this is a Moor being. He's describing the Moor. Burnt skin, dark melon. So when you pen, that's not only them. That's the year, of course, also. So they suppressing the Moors, the melanated ones, and this came about through the conquering of the Roman Empire and the conquering of the Sultans. But this inferior made the Moors reduced to inferior and not supreme as the lord of the estate. So go ahead, Tamara. You can ask the question whenever you're ready.
Well, I know that you was just speaking of the Constitution, and the Constitution is derived from the Iroquois, which is more of a modern term. The name of the land was tribe was Hattanassi tribe, and how the Constitution is derived from that. Now, say, you know, invoke the Constitution, invoke the Constitution. Let's just talk about how the treaties was formed. Let's talk about the formation of the treaty.
Well, how the United States formed the Constitution is by evoking the treaty. By applying the treaties, is they chartered to create that Constitution without being in peace with their lord and queen, or king or queen, or departments, or the sultans, or the Lenanazi, not be queen and queens, without being in peace with them in harmony, they would not be able to create the United States Constitution. So the first charter that they had was the Articles of Confederacy. That was helped to be put together by John Hanson and a lot of indigenous, as they call American Indians, but there was Moors. So the Moors showed them how the Iroquois, and they were showing teaching Benjamin Franklin, giving him ideals of how they can create their own Confederacy. So the Confederacy they got is off of us, is incorporated from us. So when they created the 1781 charter, that was put together by John Hanson, which is a Sweden, which we call a Swede, a Sikkimese Indian, but they call Moor, they call him Indian. But he, and that was nominated Moorish and Moroccan, also steered them to put the Articles of Confederacy. But before that happened, we gave them the power to have a charter was three treaties that had power here as with the Moors was French and Spain. The first treaty, when it was going to run there to seek for shelter, French, they entered treaty with France. Now, right after France, they entered treaty to learn that be Moors. So now they got what you call a charter, an amnesty, permission, and they're protected from going into a court-martial. So they were protected by them. Then from there, they created a duplicate Confederacy. The United States Constitution in Philadelphia is only a duplicate of the Articles of Confederacy. That's all. It just put more power. They just gave more power to the central government. In other words, they got away from that, but that was binding on them because that was their foundation and giving them the authority to create, go down and create the Jubilee, meaning a new beginning, a new corporation in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. So that's their starting point. That never changed. The only problem is they don't teach that the Constitution does not override a treaty. The Constitution is created from a treaty and a compact agreement. Without that, it has no foundation. So when you ask that the United States Constitution enforce the Constitution, when you say enforce it, all you're saying is this right here. You can't enforce nothing. The Sikh enforce it from his authority or the council. How it's enforced is by the supremacy clause in Article 3. Well, let me explain what I mean. If there's a treaty that's self-executed that needs a council, speaks for itself. It needs not the Constitution because none of the amendments apply to you in the Constitution. Just the Article 6, which is the judgment against the United States with contracts and treaties. So based on the treaty, that's their foundation and amnesty. So when you have a dispute with United States citizens, the United States does no longer have a council inside the Empire of Morocco. So therefore, when it comes a problem with the dispute, the Sheikh has to send from his power or a counselor from their jurisdiction to what? To anybody that they didn't speak with and make them show for cause of their status. So the treaties trump the Constitution. You can, to say the Constitution gives the treaty power or that the Constitution has to apply, that's just like somebody saying this right here. I just built me a house, a 16-story building. Right, I just built it, right, without the land. What do you build it on? You just telling me you built the building by excavating. I built it. I didn't need a land or water to build no building. I built it. I'm going to look at you as a fruitcake. Something wrong with you because you got to have a foundation. Go ahead, sis.
Okay. So you mentioned about the treaty and the Iroquois. I find that to be quite an interesting marriage amongst the two that took place. And a lot of that is not discussed. And as the supreme law, how and why did treaty power be to the point to where the enforcement of it should be looked at more? Because, you know, we have the situations that's going on with, we all know what's going on throughout the entire Midgard, entire Earth plane, where there's the hypothecation of different land. But let's focus on northwest of Mexum that's going on over here. So with that taking place, how and why should we look at these treaties a little bit more as a nation amongst ourselves?
Because the treaty is the only thing that our ancestors, that's the landmark evidence that our ancestors left for us as jurisprudence and positive law for us to know how to deal with these farmers that are living on our land. That's number one, how they got here, how they entered agreements with, and how far they can go with their power. There's a judgment against them with their power based in the treaty. So the treaty was to protect your estates, your inheritance claims. Based that they can't supersede or go beyond what was written in the four corners of that contract or that agreement, the international instrument. So when you look at a treaty, the first thing you got to look at is the people that you're living among. How did they get here? What are they claiming? They claiming to be what? They're not even claiming to be an American. They're not no American. So what we're doing is this right here. We don't know who we are. They know their foundation. They teach their foundation. They keep their structure in twofold. They jump and traverse in and out of their structure. When they need to go to original de jure jurisdiction, they go there. When they go de facto, to benefit them, they go de facto. They're allowed to do that with their people, their members of the corporation, the citizens. Now, on the other hand, they don't want us to claim the inherent power to be the descendants and the blood pedigree of these people that gave them the charter. If that happens, then all the obligations that's in them agreements that will restrict them in doing what they're doing on the land, and they couldn't use the people as surety. So the treaty is the parent master. It is the master in guiding all contracts, commerce, amity, and maritime jurisdictions, and operating on the land, air, and water, dealing with people.
Now, what would be a couple of those treaties that would be more like self-executing? I know I've heard you spoke of self-executing, a non-self-executing treaties that the autonomous people of the land can look to, study, understand, and apply to their status. Understand the status. Now, before you get to that, let's just combine that with the Dred Scott decision of status. So if you could intertwine that landmark case decision with national status and treaty protection, some treaties for that protection.
Yes, the Dred Scott decision is Dred Scott was claimed to be an African that was a slave. Now, and slave, and that's connotated. It was connotated to use, so that was dealing with people in the description of slaves. He was claiming to be descendant of Africa, but he claimed to be a slave. Now, the only claim that he got that he had a mask. He never claimed any blood pedigree. He just said he was from Africa. Africa is a continent. That's not a country. It's a continent. So he didn't never say what country or tribe he was from through blood pedigree, like the Amistad case. Now, you notice when they was taken out of Africa, they dealt with country and tribe they came from. So they made a claim. They made an inherent claim to their land and their blood pedigree. Therefore, the court had to do nothing else more than do what? Treat them as if they were what? Diplomats and public ministers from a foreign country because they was taken against their will. Now, Dred Scott, however, was different. Dred Scott claimed to be an African. He claimed to be a slave, and he claimed to be a Negro. Now, Negro, he could have got away. I say, I am an African of Morocco, of the blood pedigree of the Moors and Moroccan, who was took in servitude against my will and is in violation of the treaty, Dred Scott would have got his remedy. But because he claimed to be black, therefore black, you are dead in the law. Therefore, all he said, a black man has nothing that a white man should respect. Now, let me explain what that means so you can understand. That's like saying a dead man that's dead and got no life in this world has no rights. All his rights is gone because the only rights he got left to the ground. So when Dred Scott's claiming to be black, he's dead to the law without a nationality. He's not even a bastard. So when they claim to be white, they was claiming a political status that they that the law applies to them. That in their jurisdiction, they have law, they have statutes, they have survey rights. They're not dead to the law of nations. Dred Scott said he was black, so he was dead to the ancient law, piety and deity, and he was dead to the law of nations. Therefore, the treaty does not apply to him. However, they say the white man has nothing to respect because they're looking at him as what? He's nobody because they got a political structure and they had a political status and a nationality. Because you ask any of the Europeans from the States, they're going to say they're from Ireland, Sweden, Poland, my family from Germany, we Scotland. They're going to at least claim a pedigree even though they're here in the United States. But however, Dred Scott didn't claim a pedigree. He never came to be more. It's like, I'm Moab, I'm Ishmael, I'm Israel, I'm from Kemet. I was as a Moor. This is my land. He never claimed a pedigree. He just claimed a status that is not recognized in law for anything. But that's why they say the people that's recognized with a status in law, nationality, don't have to respect nobody with that kind of status.
Now, let's kind of back up just a little bit. I think you may have skipped over the ancient formation of the treaties. I was just going back over my notes, and I just want to make sure everything get detailed properly. So let's just go back to the ancient formation of treaties, how the nations formed those treaties, how the treaty itself became about to be law of the land.
Okay, the farthest back we can go back, because we have to go back now to our ancestors, which is called the Bible, and its contents being taught in its rightful form in history, in genealogy, astronomy, and geometry. When Abraham went into the most famous, powerful nation kingdom in the world, that's an empire. It's called the Egypt Empire. It's an empire. When he went there, Pharaoh extended to him friendship. That's a form of what? A treaty, because he's not from that land. He allowed him to stay there with his cattle and get status. That means no one hindered him, and that if any matter happened with him, one of his somebody from his nation would go to the Pharaoh, ambassador, and they would handle it from there. That's government-to-government relationship. When nations of foreign countries are traveling to go to somewhere, to their route to another country to do commerce, they have to cross somebody else's jurisdiction. So what they would do is they would stop to that leader, that emperor, or that king, and let the emperor king know, how can I compensate you for living in your land, drinking your water, setting up my tents and stuff, which is the community, which the tribes and clans set up a community. And the way they used to do is they used to set up tents because they didn't have the time to build buildings because they were only temporarily traveling through. They may be coming through there for 6 months or a year. So what the emperor would do is enter into a contract with them that they would pay for all the livestock. They can grow the food. They can do this, but they would have to pay him a fee, taxes, for being on the land. Therefore, but they will have to minister justice unto themselves. But they could not get in. They could not take jurisdiction over the nationals of that land. And if a dispute rises between them and them, then they will have a what you call a officer of each other governments will come and illustrate justice in the matter. That's the first form of doing treaties. This is a fundamental founded principle among us when we are doing stuff. Now, what happens is the Europeans, the Albions, and the Mileto people of Europe, the Mileto people of Europe already knew this science because they was in servitude under the Moors. So the European power for Europe was created. It was called the land of Edom. See, it was these lands were named after nationality, blood pedigree. That was Mr. Leto people at Albion. They were subjected to the Moors here and the Amaru and Mexico in northwest and Africa in the northwestern hemisphere. And down below the south in the northwestern hemisphere, they was in servitude to us until King Solomon, which is a Moor, fell. But I mean, he's error. He went in error. Therefore, they lost. They broke the arm. They fell loose. Therefore, the Phoenician power conquered them, took them over. So since then, all through even the Caesars, some of them melanin more, they always did what? They entered into principles of law, treaties. Like, for instance, the Book of Acts. They say, this form of treaty have I written to you. Oh, Theopolis. Theopolis was the emperor right then. He was a Caesar. So you can see that the apostles wrote them a treaty. So this is an ancient form of contracting. Now what happened is the Albions, when they started getting permission to do certain things, they had a different diabolical plot. Their job was to learn, see how weak their things became into nations and kingdoms and put people under servitude as subjection, under subjection, and we take their estates, and what we do is we'll take their estates and we'll take their commerce over, and what we do is we'll put them in a form of servitude. Where so now that we're selling their own food, they have to get permission to grow their food, and we will tell them how to drink their water and get their water. This is the form of servitude that we used to do for nations. But what we did is we had grace and mercy. We would allow the nations still to have their king in place. We allowed them to go here and take control over their water and their states as long as they pay taxes and give the best and give their first fruit up every season to the emperor and to his nationals. They would have the first wrath of all their first fruit. So that was still with a treaty. They still kept a form of sovereign power. But the Albion took it further. They started doing what you call apartheid. They started saying, hey, you know what? We're not even going to – they entered a treaty with us. What we're going to do is we're going to create a way to get them away from inheriting claims. If we can make them get away from and claiming their estates and handing it down from father – mother to daughter and son, and how can we do this? How we can do this to get out of obligation of being obligated to the treaty, me not having jurisdiction over them, and they having jurisdiction over us, and they having an ultimate alien title to blood pedigree and inherit claim. The treaty protect that. So what they did was they created a scam and said, we'll adopt them into our school system, teach them a history that's not theirs, and make them think that they was never a part of this side of the world, had no inheritance, therefore they can't claim no states because they've been heavily indoctrinated under mind control, which is called cloning. They're creating another personality in them that is called vicious brainwash and mind control.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned travel. You mentioned the ancient process set up for traveling. It is recorded that the Moors had control of the high seas, formation of the navy. You know, a lot of the strategies of war is built off the Moorish empire knowledge. So it's just been passed down from what they knew at that time. Now, you mentioned travel and you mentioned commerce. Now, what would be, let's just start with travel. What would be a treaty that would focus on the aspect of travel?
Okay, let me share this first. It is the founding principle. And see, before you deal with treaty, you have to deal with piety and deity of the people. It is a founding principle that in your own land, you have a right to commercial activity, to travel, the sell, the barter, the trade, and if you allow, if your emperor or your king and queen and their parliament allow a foreign nation to come in here to do commerce, that shake hands, that means when you are a national, go to their country, you'll extend the same protection in their country and jurisdictional domicile territory as they would have in your country, nation or empire. So the treaty brings in effect that what goes on here in my country to give you protections and privileges and rights to do things in commerce is the same honor and privilege that is mandatory granted, mandatory your rights in they domicile territory dominion, as if you was born there. So when they're doing business in your territory, they're given a right to exist as a country because they're given asylum and amnesty based on a treaty. Then the same thing goes for you when you go through their jurisdiction and they vineyard and their territory of dominion. You got the same rights as if you was in your own country. The only problem is the people is not taking upon themselves to claim their nationality. They would rather exist under a race, and race is just like open up a Monopoly game and rolling dice and hope you can get around gold without going to jail. Hope you can make it around a board without going to jail. I mean, can I make it past gold? So it's like throwing dice. You don't know what's going to happen. When you don't claim your nationality, you're playing dice. And that can go anyway. Stick on the sevens and twelves. So you're playing dice. You don't have nothing protecting you. You have no blood lineage of the cord, like the child is attached to the mother, biblical cord, or you're not attached to the land. You're supposed to be attached to the land, and when your mother pushes you out, like you're attached to the biblical cord, then your blood pedigree attaches you to the land as if you're attached to your mother through the biblical cord. You understand what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, okay, now, like I said, let's get into some of those treaties. I know you speak a lot about the Treaty of 1856 between the British the British Majesty of 1856. You also speak about the Jay Treaty. So could you shed some light on some of those treaties and its enforcement ability?
Yes, the reason why the Jay Treaty between the United States, between Great Britain and the United States, had that Indian, which is Moors, have a right to travel because the Crown already had pre-existing treaty and was given conveyed land. See, the Crown was conveyed land through indentures, by the Aboriginal indigenous Moors way back in the 15th century and the 16th century. So, therefore, the Crown had them, and that treaty let the United States know that the people passing back and forth into our whole rim. And the United States is part of the European rim. What I mean is America is just a standing jurisdiction of Europe in the northwest of Mexico, Africa, in the northwestern hemisphere, in the Mexico, Morocco. It's just a territory zone girdle around Morocco. It's called America. Now, the reason why we got a right to travel, because we was here already with that right survey. It can't be granted or given to us. She was just affirming something that's already that we had. Not only that treaty, but the Gantt Treaty guaranteed all our land. So the Crown says that our land is guaranteed. So if it's guaranteed, it can't be conveyed because it's a contract between the native people that the land will always be in control of the indigenous and the crowns. So those treaties gives you a lowlier title, which the Gantt Treaty. Also, the Lenape Treaty told the United States when they ratified and signed it, they guarantee all the Moors' land, Sheikh Mekin, Susquehanna, Winnipeg, and the Moroccan Empire. That land was guaranteed. What happened was when the Civil War came, people from Australia, Canada, United Kingdom, Greece, Italians, Germans, Russians, Mulatto, and Albanians all came on a boat in the Civil War time to fight the Southern War in the Moors' land. And what happened was the Moors got caught up in the war. Before the war, the Moors fighting the South for their land. There was a killing of Sharice taking the land. So they was done honoring the treaty. So when the United States seen that the people started killing the Lenape Moors, the United States said, well, wait a minute, all these people over here, why don't you just go ahead and create a constitution and we'll admit you into the union, the fiction union they created, the statutory union that they had in 1781 they created when Lincoln got assassinated, reorganized. they admitted them in the union, these new states, and they was only getting what you call political jurisdiction because they was killing the Lenape Moors. So what the United States did was walk all the Lenape Moors out of their land, guaranteed land. So now that was the act of war. So in order for that treaty to go back in force, you need the original Lenape Moors to claim, assert the authority, to be say who they are, to be repossessed, establish their government, claim it. But what they did was they took people that was mixed, Mulatto, mixed Mulatto, and Albions, and made them claim to be the Lenape. What is impossible because you don't have the melon. You're not a Moor. The Moor is the melon. So you don't have the melon, so they did that so the treaty can't be enforced. So to keep it all going, they have to now indoctrinate you so they make you think that the treaty doesn't apply to you, that the only rights that you got is through their constitution. And they all consider privileges to you because you dead to the law. That's why they can do what they want to do with you. Go ahead, sister.
Now, who would be considered a consul in the treaty?
Who consider what?
A consul. Who is a consul in the treaty?
A consul is a man or a woman that is ordained, appointed by the Moorish government. That's how a consul gets the authority. The sheikh is appointed by the council, which gives the sheikh the authority to be the jurist, to go ahead and litigate the matters in foreign lands, where citizens of a foreign nation doing business in the Empire of Morocco, the sheikh will step in and hear the matter when it's a dispute between their citizens and our nationals, the national, the Moorish governments. The sheikh can overtake it. They're ordained by the Moorish government.
Okay. So you mentioned about surveying a land. Now, my question would be, the treaty is established. It's that the treaties are the supreme law of the land. Now, let's look at ecclesiastical law and things of that nature. Would that also be in alignment with the treaty power? Because I know you just spoke about surveying the land, and there's covenants throughout the Heliobiblios text as well as the Quran that talks about someone inheritance, dying inheritance. I think it's like Deuteronomy 28:14, where it say, do not curse to move someone inheritance, because that is a mark that has been laid out in the ancient foremothers and forefathers. I'm paraphrasing, so just go back and pick it up. So would those ecclesiastical laws be in alignment with treaties as well?
Yes, and I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to explain to you how. The United States filed made the First Amendment and say that no religious test. The reason why they made an amendment, they add that in there to fix the Constitution, because even among themselves, state jurisdiction, among the citizens of the United States, this is what they're not telling nobody. They wasn't all considered as being black at that time. There was people still considered as being Moors that was living in the United States jurisdiction that was practicing Mohammedanism, Christians, and they was Jews. And they were saying, and they was making a claim that Congress didn't have a right to make any laws pertaining to them, because the rights that they had already pre-existed before the United States was even created, the Constitution was even put together. So they didn't have that. They didn't have the delegation of authority when they made the Constitution, even under the Articles of Confederacy. Neither did they have a delegation of authority to get in the affairs of ecclesiastic and spiritual religion affairs. Neither was they granted that with the Treaty of Peace and Friendship with the Crown. Neither was they granted that with the Lenape Treaty. Neither was they granted that with the Moroccan Treaty. So when they made a constitution, that something happened based on them treaties and based on the people that had the status that was living among them, and say you can't make no laws, because the laws, the power to make laws respected to Muhammad, followers of Prophet Muhammad, followers of the Christ, the Christian faith, and the Christ Jesus, the Christ, the Brady Anointing, and also Judaism under the Torah, could not be delegated to Congress because it was already existed before Congress even was formed, before there was even a Albion over here. So that's already was pre-existing law, foundation law, that the Congress had to admit that they could not make anything to interfere with that operation because it was going on when they formed the Constitution. Because remember, the treaty that they made with the Emperor of Morocco was based on a Muslim treaty. They were Muslim and some was Christian. So when they made a treaty of Limonati, they were spiritual people. They was Christian. They followed Torah, and some of them were Muslim. So these Muslim Christians and Jewish, they call it Torah, people following that, was the ones that gave the United States sovereignty because they were spiritual and religious people who follow astronomy and geometry and follow the customs of the cosmos and piety deity. So they didn't, the Congress could not interfere with that because there was no power delegated to Congress to rule over that. This is why the 1856 treaty with Her Majesty the Queen made it clear that you cannot discriminate against a Muhammad follower, a Christian, or a Jew. This is why that's in there. So if they can't discriminate, then this is applied to the United States. So the only problem, the reason why they interject and get involved with ecclesiastic matters, because the people waive their rights under that ecclesiastic authority and power by cooperating under a corporation as nonprofit, selling their soul for money. Yes.
You hit it. You hit the nail on the head. And I just wanted to correct something. It's Deuteronomy 27:17. It say, "Cursed be he that removeth his neighbor's landmark." And landmark is that is what has been laid down from thy inheritance. Another one that you can look up is also Proverbs 20:28, and it states in that, "Do not remove the ancient landmark which your fathers have set." So, with that being said, you know, we know
that's
that
positive jurisprudence. What you just did is positive jurisprudence. You just went back into our ancient ancestors and brought the reality of the truth out in that book. This is the positive law with Minister Abdul, Professor Abdul was talking about. They don't know what they're doing. They have no jurisdiction over the Bible, which is the Torah and the Injil. Neither do they have any jurisdiction over the Quran. What happens is people sell themselves and involuntary tort to waive these rights because they don't know the importance of them and that is the foundation of everything is built on. Go ahead, Tamara.
How can we enforce these treaties? How can we just really get into it and start enforcing these treaties? Because,
by thinking, evoking, and writing ourselves back into our proper status by thinking, evoking, and writing, and making a claim so that way we can inherit the estate and repossess them.
You know, it's amazing that you say that because I remember when I was in church, there was a song they would sing every time the doors opened, they would say, "Come and get your inheritance." And then now when I have studied and learned more, it's amazing to me that they do not understand the power of what they're singing. They're luring the people to think that the inheritance is in another realm or dimension of what the person is currently in now. So we enforce those treaties by being ourselves, going back to our norms and customs of our ancient foremothers and forefathers. People that don't understand it that clear. You made it simple and clear. I want you to put it in another context to really, because I know you speak about the international law and you speak about the definition of a refugee. So you can speak on the ones who say, "Well, you know, I'm not a Moor, I'm an Indian, or I don't understand that." What are they actually saying truthfully when it applies to international status and their treaty protection?
When you say, when you're a Moor, and you say, "I don't want to be called a Moor, I want to be called an Indian," are you saying that you don't want to be recognized under nationality? you want to be put in the class of nouns. It's called colorable law, which is called de facto of norms. Meaning that you'd rather be called an Indian, because an Indian is only a title given to you, taking you a step lower, so they can bring you into what you call an involuntary servitude state. Now, even in that state, you still have power over them if you know how to use etymology and say then the people back then, it doesn't, hear me out. Every time it talks about the Moorish Empire, it never say anything about an Indian. See, this is what they jam themselves with. You say, well, the 16th century, the powers, now remember, this only happened because the crown took the advice of these three European scholars. The Abdul was talking about the first one, who said we're going to determine the people by what we say through race, not nationality. So when they determined that, this is when the crown started doing treaty with the Moors and started interchanging the words Moroccan, Moor, or Moorish to Indian. This is why Indian is not in any Moorish treaty. Because remember now, in the Moroccan Empire, although the Sultan was the ultimate arm, but there was kings and queens still ruling that had their power, sovereign power. And they was taking these people that were Moors and put them under the title of racist based on this European, 16th century European, where Professor Abdul, when you lock it in together, you'll see why the Moors was changed to Indians from a nationality as Moors, meaning from Israel, Moab, Ishmael, Kemet, all these different nations in the land of Canaan, in the land of Chaldean. So you'll see why they was changed. It was changed because they was taking them a step lower. Because if they called them Moors, then that means they was obligated to the Moors Empire. But if they took them and called them Indians, then they could call them savages of a tribe running wild on the land. You understand what I'm saying now?
Mm-hmm. And in international
one for being civilized, the other one for being uncivilized, not civilized. You understand what I'm saying now? Not organized.
Right. Yeah, that's what I was going to say, not organized. Because there were a group of Moors that already had a formation of government in place. Now, in international law, like I said, now when one state in that's proclaimed a national status, they're considered a refugee. Now, what does that mean?
That means that a refugee means that you are lost at sea, fleeing a country, taken out of a country, lost at sea, and found it on the shores of another foreign country or in a jurisdiction. And what happened is, when that happened is, the law doesn't apply to you, the land inheritance, allodial title, and basic right survey of the land, your inherent thing doesn't apply to you. That means all you get was they call privileges, permission to do things. And when that happened, they can relocate you, they can take your children, they can do whatever they want to do because you don't have any piety and deity, or you don't have any attachment to the cord, like the baby attached to the mother, biblical cord. You're not attached to nothing. The mother is the land, the survey, the rights to her, the survey. You're not attached to the land, which is the pedigree. Therefore, the cord doesn't apply. Therefore, like nutrition flows to the baby, the survive in the belly, you can't survive on the land because you're not attached to it, like a child attached to the biblical cord. You understand?
I understand. Now, I just want to kind of get into some things. I know the things that, you know, our listeners may be wondering and thinking about, you know, when we say refugee, and you mentioned lost at sea. Now, you're not, you know, lost, let's clear that up. I like to clear things up. You're not talking about lost at sea as in the middle of an ocean somewhere, just floating around, because that your body is actually on land. But explain that, clear that up between lost at sea, jurisdiction, and shelf act. Because
okay,
I think that'll bring it home.
Yeah, the lost at sea means that your mother in her water, you're engulfing your mother water in her belly with water. When your mother pushed you out, she pushed you out on the land. She pushed to push you out where her native land is, where though she have claimed lordly entitles, inheritance claims to hand down. Now, when your mother pushed you out, her water break, and she pushed you out, and she takes the cord and cut the biblical cord, and then she takes the child and hand it to what? An agent on a foreign vessel. Listen to me. She hands it to an agent on a foreign vessel who raised the baby, puts it up as a commodity. Now, they do all this stuff to her on the vessel, then they hand the baby back to her, and she don't have any now. She don't have any more control. She don't have a nationality. So the baby never arrived in the country. It never got to a country. It never got to his native country to claim any blood pedigree rights, to be in a family of nations. I mean, the lineage, the kinship of nations. So therefore, because it was delivered on a foreign vessel, and because there was no one there to claim, a government to claim her or the child, therefore they lost that seed because she never arrived in her country. You understand what I'm saying now?
Yes. I have a caller that has a question. Let's take a question from 917, number ended in 1715.
Yes.
All right, listen, do you have a question for Shem Malachi Bay? Listener, do you have a question for Shem Malachi Bay? All right, I think they may have forgotten their question. Let me see if we have anyone else on the line that may have a question for you. Number 704-641-412. Do you have a question for Shem Malachi Bay? All right, do you have a
Nothing.
Question for Shem Malachi Bay? All right, so everyone's going to be a little shy this evening. All right, so you were stating that there's two births that take place. So get that clear. There's two births that take place here. The parent will arrive at a hospital, which is of the jurisdiction of a foreign government, which is the British Crown,
right,
which is controlled by the British Crown. Okay,
which,
so the parent gives...
Which is the land.
But however, it is built up, which is creates a shelf, correct?
Yes, absolutely. It's attached to the land. That's right.
Yep. Okay, so the parent gives birth to this child, and once the baby is born, the identification of the baby is not provided to the administrators of the hospital, saying, hey, no, my baby is a national. Even though that I'm in your hospital, my child is still a national of the Moroccan Moorish Empire. That's not discussed. So what happened is a presumption and assumption assumed that this child did not have a status. They take the baby from his natural birth and take his feet and stamp, which then after that it becomes a B-I-R-T-H and now becomes a B-E-R-T-H, which is that
right.
It becomes the paper complicated to monetary finances for their nation. And we
Absolutely.
As people, we attach ourselves to this B-E-R-T-H because we're told about natural status and how to operate in it. So
yeah.
Moving forward, what would be the first step that one would take to come out of that status of a...
It's for the people to come together, men and women, and claim to be of the people that gave these treaties, the kings, the queens, the princes, the princesses, the emperors, the emperors, and also the Dey, the Bey, the Alis, and the subjects of Morocco. They have to claim to be the blood, pedigree, descendants, kinsmanship heirs. Of these, when they come together to form a government. When they form a government, they set up what you call a structure. And when they set up a structure how they come deal with a national. What I mean, if a woman and a man have a baby, the baby will be, if they have a baby inside another hospital in the jurisdiction of, listen to me, in the jurisdiction of the United States, which is in, and also in the jurisdiction of America, which is the political jurisdiction of Europe. If they have a baby in America, I'm going to say America because the United States is in America, also in Morocco. When they have a baby there, now that's fine. Now the treaty kicks in. The baby will have to leave the hospital. Once you leave the hospital, it will have to be navigated to the Moorish government to make sure that their status is on the record, who they are. Now, the baby is not lost at sea. The baby has been delivered, and the vessel, in her vessel has been delivered. When the baby gets delivered, it's been transported, navigated to the Moroccan government to claim their national blood pedigree to make sure that's protected. Now, when a woman has the baby, that don't happen. The baby is navigated to a foreign jurisdiction. Therefore, it's lost at sea because it never made it to its country. But I mean now, the jurisdiction, the territorial jurisdiction.
Right. So there's a lot of us babies that are, well, not myself, but there's a lot of babies out there that are still lost at sea. And how do we get our babies, our back home, to be back on the land? Now there's a rule in law, nunc pro tunc, now for then, which means the fraud doesn't have an expiration date. So what would be a process of someone saying, well, you know, I'm a grown man or a woman, you know, what would that process look like for them?
Well, when the Moorish government is erected and created, and that happened to them, all they would have to do is come to the Moorish government and claim their nationality and tell the Moorish government what happened during their birth, and be set up by the jurisdictions of the Moorish government, would turn around and separate them from the British subject name. Now, it also will protect that British subject name as a contract name based on treaty, meaning that that's the Moorish property. The mother is Moorish, the son or daughter is Moorish, so the name derived from the mother is book. So therefore, the name is a contract name. So when a Moor is doing business in that political jurisdiction, he can also preserve his rights through that organ, that contract name, based on Moorish treaty, because that contract name is a part of what his business is. He's doing business under. And that's how you do it. Your Moorish government come back and correct that. Government-to-government relationship, letters of interrogatory, writ, and straighten the matter out. The Moorish government does that through the council and the sheikh.
Okay. Now we have our last 6 minutes left. Do you want to give the listeners some information about what's going on through United Republic of Morocco, because someone would say, well, where is this Moorish government at? You know, how do I reach this Moorish government? So would you like to give some information to our listeners about this Moorish government?
Yes. The Moorish government has been already erected. The only problem is the international community don't know, neither do the United States. Now, we don't have to be brought, we're doing Facebook Lives. We're doing these radio talk shows to bring the Moors together. So what we're doing is already here. What we're doing is trying to get the Moors, which we built what you call an academy, which is a university that we built. We have a charter, so what we're going to do to get the Moors back on track so they can know what's going on, we're going to have Tamara, which is the national secretary and treasurer, she's going to put together a membership form application for everybody to sign to enroll into the Moors Academy. Now, by doing that, we should have all the Moors most of the Moors in Australia, United Kingdom and Canada, and also here in North America, in Morocco, to give what? To buy $100 to sign up for the application for the class. She's going to work out a system and to make sure so many classes be done during the week or on that day. We may do one class and do pick the same, and then that's the next people get a class. So we may be 6 hours in one day, but we got four classes done. The next Saturday, the next day would be for the other party. So that's what we're going to do. That way we can get all the Moors together in different domiciles so they can create their own national Moors government. They can do it. because a lot of them got skills. So we can do that. We can bring the morals back. It's here. All you have to do is just when you see the website, when you see the application, join in, fill it out, pay the fee. Then you will know that the government is erected because you are part of it. You can't. The United States cannot function if people don't register, vote, and vote. That government is dead. If somebody says, I ain't vote no more, it ain't no more government. It's dead. The way the government keeps surviving is upon the divinity and the spirit that's in the people to invoke, to know, and to operate on that contract. Nothing else. That's how it is. That's how life is.
Hashem, I want to thank you again. We're down to our last 4 minutes. I'd like to thank you for tuning in to State of the Nationals. Please continue to join us every Thursday at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on Blog Talk Radio / United Respublica of Morocco. Now, if you would like to be a guest on State of the Nationals, you can email me at UnitedRespublicaOfMorocco@protonmail.com. Once again, Brother Shem, I can't thank you enough for the work that you're doing. It's an honor to be just in the fold with being able to help liberate our people. As I stated earlier to someone, I would do it for free because it's right and it's necessary. And with that being said, I want everyone to have a good evening. And I
Music licensing reimagined.